Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Enhance your CTE programs with AP and the college credit it offers. New AP Career Kickstart courses are now available for high schools to adopt for the 2026-2027 school year. Help your students kickstart their careers with AP Cybersecurity or AP Business with Personal Finance. Learn more at careerkickstart.org.
Now, when Suzanne Scanlon was a student in the 90s and grieving the loss of her mother, she made a suicide attempt that landed her in a New York State psychiatric institute. After nearly 3 years and countless experimental treatments, Suzanne left the ward on shaky legs. She's here to tell her story. Thank you for being so brave and being on the show with us, Suzanne.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So 3 years, that's a long time for anyone, isn't it?
Yes. You know, now in the scope of my life, it doesn't feel that long. But of course, as a young woman, it was quite long. It was too long. So,
when we say experimental treatments, is that exactly what they were doing? They were experimenting with medications with you?
Yes. You know, this was at a moment at the kind of on the cusp of the dominant psychoanalytic moment in therapy and treatment and the beginning of the real biomedical model, which was, you know, heavily influenced, of course, by pharmaceutical treatments and the development of many, many new antidepressants, among many other medications. And so this hospital was a research hospital. It was a teaching hospital. But because there were so many ongoing new medications coming out, we would be switching those quite a lot, most of us, like, let's try this and this. And it became very hard to know what was working. Once you're taking so many medications, I think the side effects were often quite strong, and it's hard to tell the difference between the suffering around the actual illness or the depression I had or what I was going through and the treatment itself.
That makes no sense, does it? If you think about the logic behind that, they're experimenting on you, so they're trying to find out which would work, and yet they can't because they're using them all at once. That's crazy.
Right, yeah. And I mean, it was really only later, I think I say in the book, that I discovered, you know, that in the hospital itself, there was a lot of influence from Upjohn, the pharmaceutical company there, with the doctors and, you know, asking them to use different sleeping pills and different antipsychotic drugs. And I will say that I was on a number of antipsychotic drugs and for my problem, for my depression and so on, that was just completely inappropriate. And I spent a long time just so heavily medicated and sort of and numbed that I remember quite well kind of living like that. But now in retrospect, it just seems absurd to me that that would have been my treatment for so long. And I was having ongoing therapy, which I think was the very positive part of the hospital. And I did have quite a connection to a doctor eventually who was quite helpful to me. But I don't think that in conjunction with all of the pharmaceutical treatment was the right thing.
Yeah. My next question actually was going to be, do you have much memories of those 3 years? But I suppose they're sort of hazy memories, are they?
Yes. As I was saying the other day, in some ways, my book, you know, I try to make it clear that my memoir, that in some ways I'm an unreliable narrator of my story. But I, you know, of course, I have some very clear memories, and I've written a lot about it, and I kept extensive journals of the time. And not that the journals were extremely helpful in revisiting, but every once in a while there would be a key to a memory. I certainly have strong memories of the people I was connected to there, including other patients and some staff members and a certain doctor. And I have impressions, of course, and memories of the place itself. So writing the book, you know, I had these ways in, I could say, to bring it alive again. Sure. And partly it was through the architecture and through these relationships.
And after the 3 years of being there, were you able to leave under your own volition?
Yes. In fact, it became quite urgent because the hospital changed and the state funded support for the place that I lived. The treatment I had was defunded. And so it suddenly became clear that everybody had to leave, everyone who was under the protocol that I was. So many of us who had been there for years, it became imperative that the treatment plan transition to getting us out of there. The hospital had already transitioned into a sort of short-term ward for younger adolescents. They started doing a lot of treatment or use of new medications on adolescents, which was its own problem. And I wasn't, you know, involved in that, but I was aware of that. So in any case, it was my own volition, but it was extremely difficult.
And ironically, it must have taken you years to recover from that actual experience that was supposed to make you better.
Yes, it has. I mean, in some ways, it's again, like anything you go through as a young person, it's so important to, it's so integral to who I am now. So I don't think that I feel like I got over it so much as my writing about it has been an attempt to sort of integrate it into my experience, because into my understanding of myself, because part of what really compounded the even getting over it is, you know, re-entering this world with such shame around and stigma around mental illness. And so it's not like even though it was so important to my life, I couldn't easily talk about it without making people uncomfortable and perhaps, you know, enduring or receiving the kind of stigma. And I think that's still the case. I mean, I'm re-experiencing this a little bit in talking about the book. And I don't, you know, I have to separate people's reactions, because I know that it's more a part of where they are or how they understand things, if they're going to kind of project their own judgment onto me. But it's amazing to me how alive it still is, this stigma.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, actually. We do a program once a month called The Me Nobody Sees, which is about mental health awareness. And yeah, I honestly thought that we'd come a long way. You know, you see the young royals, yeah, talking about mental health awareness. And I thought we'd come a long way. But then I speak to people like you, and this happens a lot, not just yourself. And we've really not come very far at all.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's so individual. I will say that I loved it with the royals. I loved it when Harry, Prince Harry, talked about his mother's death causing him a depression, whenever that was, and leading to depression, because that was so linked to my experience in early parental loss and unresolved grief and how that leads to depression, and all these ways. I mean, in my family too, obviously not as extreme as in the royal family, but there was this decision, really, unspoken decision, that you don't talk about it and you move on. And so for many people, that becomes, you know, that turns inward, and that becomes what we later call mental illness. I do think with younger people, my students, people in generation after me, in some ways I do think, you know, it is better, and that they are able to talk about it and not feel that it's a totalizing part of their identity or character. So, yeah, it's a mixed thing, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope we're moving in the right direction, at least,
yeah.
At the very least. Yeah. Now, as well as your story, because it is a memoir, but you also look back in history of other women that were misunderstood. I mean, to me, you were grieving the death of your mother. It's understandable you're going to go into depression. That should have been what they were concentrating on.
Right.
You speak about people like Virginia Woolf and Sylvia Plath, who were all, back in the day, known as mad women, weren't they?
Yes, yes. Yes, and they're both geniuses, and I was drawn to them very early and immediately. And I think that it was quite frustrating to me that, that was their received opinion of them or idea of their work. I think that has changed, but in both cases, you know, that was something I perhaps heard about as soon as I heard, you know, started reading them. I maybe knew that reputation for them before I was able to receive their work. And that's just, I mean, once you spend time reading the body of work of Virginia Woolf or Sylvia Plath, who didn't live even half as long, or maybe when she died closer to 30, I just think that it feels like such an injustice that that's how they get read or dismissed or reduced even.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Well, our listeners can find out more from the book, which is called Committed, A Memoir of Finding Meaning in Madness. It's by Suzanne Scanlon, who we're chatting to now. And I know that you have your own website, don't you, Suzanne? Do you want to give those details out?
Sure. It's suzannescanlon.com. And you can find my books there and my upcoming events and so on. I'm also on social media, Instagram and so on.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being so open and honest and joining us on today's show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.